At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then add the final touch with two for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number two on this opening day of a new week. It is a Monday live right here on the Early Line. And on this Monday, what more could you want but a game seven? The two best words in sports for a Stanley Cup title on the line tonight in Sunrise, Florida, between the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. So let's dive right into a game seven preview and how we reach this point with Jo Madden. She joins us here to start off this second hour and to look at game seven tonight in Sunrise. Jo, have you recovered from being inside Rogers Place on Friday night for game number six? Are you ready to go for game seven on this Monday evening?
I am so ready, and I'm so excited for game number seven here. And yeah, recovering from game six, I tell you, that environment was insane. It was the loudest I've ever heard the Canadian anthem be sung in Canada. That building was absolutely electric. The fans were so great up there in Edmonton. I really do tip my hat to them. I was wearing red and black, and I still got treated fantastically. But it was funny, you guys, everyone, it was a sea of blue and orange. I saw four Panthers jerseys, and that's it. Over the whole night, walking the city and everything, it really was an Oilers fan base and a true Oilers fan base up there.
The Oilers capitalizing on that atmosphere, on that electricity to win game number six, stave off elimination, and force a game seven for a Stanley Cup. 5-1 the victory, Jo, on Friday night in game number six. Edmonton, a slight home ice favorite, a total of 5.5, does go over once again. What was the key as you were there watching it outside of the atmosphere and on the ice for the Oilers to force a seventh game?
You know, you look at that effort the Edmonton Oilers came out with, and it just looked like they were able to outskate the Florida Panthers in every zone of the ice. They were so phenomenally strong, and that was with the Florida Panthers limiting Connor McDavid. That game for Connor McDavid, he didn't even register a shot on goal. Now, he had some great plays within the neutral zone, and he was able to get the puck out of his zone, but you saw Barkov all over him and Matthew Tkachuk all over him every time Connor McDavid tried to get free. But the depth of the Edmonton Oilers, which was always something we questioned coming into the Stanley Cup Finals, coming into the playoffs as a whole, was how can Edmonton compete with their lack of depth? And we saw a little bit of that in that first game out there and in that second game versus the Florida Panthers. And we saw it a couple times versus the Dallas Stars, where their depth wasn't coming to play. Well, you look at that last game, game six, and you saw the depth come out. You saw these playmakers be able to get things done and Stuart Skinner be able to stand on his head. So looking at that game, there was a pivotal point for the Florida Panthers where a goal was taken back. And I do think that was the turning mark of the game with that goal taken back. It was like a deflated feeling for Florida. You could see it out there on the ice. You could see it in their hustle out there. It just wasn't the same effort you were seeing out of them from before they tried to get that goal. They're feeling defeated right now, and we'll see if they can take it to Florida tonight and be able to really get that energy back in and under them, because they're looking tired on the ice.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt about it. The momentum has really changed for the Oilers here. Those first three games with the Panthers won 3-0 and 4-1. I mean, those first two games in Sunrise, 7-1 advantage here. Bobrovsky's playing great hockey. And coming into the series, we were probably in agreements. The better goaltender by far is on Florida's side. But fast forward now, three straight victories by the Oilers. And now we're saying to ourselves, well, the better goalie might reside in Edmonton's side at this point now. So looking at these first six games, we haven't seen this obviously. Three wins one side, three wins on the other, forcing a game seven is just incredible. But that momentum factor here tonight, how do you think that plays out between just the two goalies here, Joe?
You know, you look at the two goalies, and the Oilers fans were in Bobrovsky's head in that last game. They were chanting his name, and they were getting under his skin. Now, Bobrovsky needs a reset, and we've seen him in playoffs before have those struggles. He won them game one. You look at that first game, the Florida Panthers didn't deserve to win that. The Edmonton Oilers outplayed them on all ends of the ice. It was because of Bobrovsky. They were able to get that win. But you're right, Stuart Skinner has looked absolutely fantastic during the playoffs, and I didn't think that he would be the goalie to be able to play the better game here in the Stanley Cup Finals. The pressure isn't getting to him, and he is getting that support from his defense. The Florida Panthers are shooting everything on him. And I won't be shocked if Stuart Skinner comes out and has another fantastic night. This is something none of us expect. Well, I don't think most people expected would be Stuart Skinner to be the better goaltender between the two. But we've got two goaltenders with every ability to keep this a lower scoring game tonight. I don't think it's going to happen. You look at the offensive firepower and the desperation these teams are going to have in that third period, just like that last game, those empty netters coming into play, pushing us over a total. And we've got plus money on the total over 5.5 tonight. But between these two goaltenders, who do I have the most faith in right now? It's Stuart Skinner, which is a terrifying statement for me to say over Bobrovsky. Bobrovsky, two shutouts in the playoffs so far. He was, you know, everyone thought he was going to win them this, but he's just not looking solid. He's looking rattled out there.
How far we have come from the clean sheet that Sergei Bobrovsky had in game number one, 32 saves, not a single goal allowed, to where we are tonight. Back in Sunrise, game seven for a Stanley Cup on the line. Edmonton in their first Stanley Cup final in nearly two decades, trying to win Canada its first Stanley Cup in over three decades. The Oilers one win away from doing that and trying to become the first team since it's the 1942 Toronto Maple Leafs to come back from an 0-3 deficit. The Florida Panthers, only a 30-year-old franchise in their tenure in the National Hockey League, looking for their first Lord Stanley's Cup as well. And Joe, you saw the money line right there. You gave us your thoughts on the total. Minus 114, that's it, in slight favor of Florida with home ice advantage tonight. Minus 106 on the other side for Edmonton. 8 cents, that's all. 8 cents of distinction between the two for a game seven in the final game of this NHL season. How tightly contested is tonight's game in Sunrise going to be?
It is going to be so tight. I think this is going to be the first game of this series that we do see overtime in. I do think both of these teams have every ability to win. But for the Florida Panthers, if they're not the team that scores that first goal, they're going to be in trouble. I think their hearts will sink if the Edmonton Oilers come out here strong and score a quick goal on Bobrovsky. And that could be all she wrote out there. It could be the end of the Florida Panthers' hopes and dreams here to win that Stanley Cup if Edmonton comes out and scores first. So I think this is a tight one. I do think Florida has every ability to get the win if they can come out and score first. And I think it does go to overtime. Plus 330 to go to overtime tonight, you guys. Great value out there.
That's what we're rooting for, a little extra hockey tonight. We probably only thought we were getting four games. Now we're going to get seven with a chance of overtime. Sign me up. But by the way, if it does go to overtime, regardless of which team wins here, the Conn Smythe Trophy looks like it's Connor McDavid's at this point at a minus 3,500 price, followed by Barkov at 12-1, and then Bobrovsky at 100-1. Regardless of what happens tonight, is McDavid going to get the Conn Smythe here, Joe?
I really do think so. And you can look at some bets like Connor McDavid to win the Conn Smythe and the Florida Panthers still to win. And you're going to get some plus money on that. But it's his no matter what, I think, out here. You look at him 42 points in the playoffs. And I know that he wasn't able to get on the board in that last game, but I do think he is the player out here that will get it. And I don't see anyone else coming into the equation. It's crazy how these odds really did flip. Minus 3,500, of course, unbettable kind of situation here, but he's going to get it tonight. The books are telling us this. I can't see anyone else winning the award.
Mm-hmm. Could be the first skater in a very long time, just the second in the history of the Stanley Cup postseason to win the Conn Smythe on the losing team. But the odds makers expect this to be close. Edmonton, a very short underdog on the road in Sunrise. Joe Maddon, enjoy Game 7. Thank you for everything here on the Early Line. More on TEL next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A check-in around Major League Baseball. We start with the AL pennant odds and then make our way into the National League. Here we are in late June. The All-Star break not all that far away, just about 3 weeks until we get to the Midsummer Classic, that midway point, although we will be past it technically this year in MLB. So, Donnie, we start in the American League, where the Yankees are dealing with a couple of injuries. Giancarlo Stanton over the weekend placed on the IL as well. And technically, despite having the most wins in both the AL and all of Major League Baseball, 52 of them for New York, no longer the best winning percentage based on just strictly percentage. That belongs to the Cleveland Guardians, who are riding a 5-game win streak in this new week. And yet the Yanks remain the AL pennant favorites at a 2-1 number.
They should, though. They really should be. And I also said, like, you know, last week, the Yankees and the Orioles, right? It's good for their fan bases that they're so close between a game and a half to 2 games, whatever it was last week, where you expect your front offices to hit that gas pedal when it comes time to get a better team on the field post All-Star break. Because the one thing that you know right. from the Yankees and the Orioles is what, Ben? You're going to fight with each other throughout the stretch here, and you want home field advantage. So if the Orioles go, I think we're doing fine, and the Yankees go out and add a very good pitcher and a very good bat, then you're going to be in a little bit of trouble. But also hear me out on this. The Yankees are good, despite this past weekend not playing great baseball. Giancarlo Stanton's down for at least 1 month. And I always say this, sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle that way, because if you are the Yankees, you go out and make a move to try to, you know, make up for that injury. And certainly it's not going to be some, you know, random players that you're picking up on the side, like a blockbuster player to get in there, an all-star caliber guy. I'm interested to see what the Yankees do, because I'm not panicking on them. Even with that injury to Stanton, they'll be out a month. He's still going to be coming back. It's a hamstring. It's not as if it's a knee injury or an Achilles or something worse like that. But just from this past weekend, I'm just interested to see where the Yankees move forward, because they're playing great baseball now, floundered a little bit over the weekend, now getting some injuries. I just want to see how they react to it. That's all.
Lost the weekend series at home inside Yankee Stadium against the Atlanta Braves, 52-28. That is the record for New York. They have played 80 games. So when I said to start off this segment that the MLB All-Star game and All-Star break is not necessarily the midway point, although we consider it that, the Yankees nearly at their midway point here, having already played 80, 52-28. 49-28, the record for Baltimore. A game and a half separates those two teams. The same amount of losses, three less wins for the O's to the Yanks for a game and a half difference in the American League East. But again, the Guardians, only 75 games played, but they've won 49-26 after winning 5 straight games to enter this new week. And now Cleveland, 7.5-game advantage in the American League Central, despite having 2 teams behind them above 500. That's not often the case across many divisions in MLB. 4-1 the price on the Orioles. The Mariners have that third best number at plus 650, and the Guardians at 8-1. Donnie, when we once looked at the American League pennant odds, you said really outside of New York and Baltimore, there were not many teams that you trusted to be a true contender for a pennant in the American League. How do you feel now?
I'm still, like, when it's all said and done, right, because I'm using projections here and saying, okay, what's the record right now? What do you think it's going to be at the end of the season? But also on top of that is, what's the team going to be like on the field at the end of the season? Not the, just the record itself, but who's going to be playing? Because I have faith that the Yankees and the Orioles are going to press that lever and say, you know what? We're in position to win a World Series. Let's make this happen. Mm-hmm. Now, does that mean giving away your best prospects or rental players? No, it doesn't. But if you're looking between the Yankees and the Orioles in an arms race here, you figure they're going to add pitchers. They're going to add a bat. They're going to add bullpen here. The one thing that I worry about is, because once again, the Orioles are only a game and a half back of the Yankees. They're going to fight it out in the East for the rest of the summer. My question is, can the Minnesota Twins hang on close enough to force the Guardians into saying, you know what? We might need a little bit of extra revamp on this team to make it to that finish line and still be in first place. They're a really good baseball team, getting quality pitching and some guys in that lineup that I really love to bat on a night-to-night basis. But I think sometimes you get lulled to sleep. Like, let's just say the Guardians, in a week's time here, Ben, are 10.5 games up in the Central Division. Their ownership group, but again, operates like a small market team, might say, you know what? We're not going to give up any of our prospects here. We're not going to add to payroll. We're good enough as is. Because when you get to the playoffs, I don't think they line up number one versus number one, number two versus number two, and certainly that lineup 1-9. And again, I preface this by saying, I really like that Cleveland line. But if you're looking at the Yankees, if they're fully healthy and adding on by the time you get to the playoffs, I just don't think they stack up in the playoffs. So I love what I see out of the Guardians. I just want that ownership group to say, look, it's not often that the Guardians may be the best team in baseball record-wise. Add on to it. Go win a World Series here for Cleveland.
And it would be very interesting as well to look at where the pennant prices were at this point a season ago on the two teams that won the pennant, the Rangers out of the American League. The Diamondbacks came out of nowhere to win the NL and play in a World Series. In the expanded postseason, now in the bigs, anything can really happen by the time we reach October, and that's what it takes to cash this ticket. Not to be the best team in your league or the pennant favorite when the playoffs begin, but making sure you carry over the momentum from a long 162 into the postseason. I think the odds makers have it correct with the two teams at the front of the pennant prices, the Yankees as the favorites, the Orioles just not all that far behind at a 4-1 price. But you are going to get the benefit of winning a division. In Cleveland right now, with the season ended today, of course it does not, but nearing its midway point, would be the number one overall seed in the American League playoffs. The Guardians, again, 7.5 game lead in the American League Central, -220 to win the division. The Twins not all that far behind. They would be a wild card team if the season ended today. Baltimore has a 6.5 game lead over Minnesota for that top wild card spot. So let's look at the American League West. The reigning World Series champs, the Rangers. They swept the Royals this weekend. The Houston Astros, who have played in the last 7 ALCSs, they swept the Orioles. Worth a sprinkle at all, DRS, in your estimation, on the two teams from Texas in the AL West?
Again, going back a couple weeks, I always thought it was going to be Texas that would be able to overcome the Houston Astros and the Seattle Mariners. So I'll still stick with that opinion. I don't love what I see, but get Max Scherzer back, it looks pretty good. But hear me out on this. The Yankees, run differential, +109. The Orioles.
Looks as though we had a technical difficulty there with Donnie Wrightside. Does not often happen, but I am here. Donnie was making great points on the American League pennant prices. We'll do the same in the National League up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on this Monday on the Early Line on Sports Grid, I am Ben Stevens. As we look around the updated pennant prices in Major League Baseball, as we shared to start off our American League discussion, most teams are near the midway point of their 162-game season around the major leagues. The Yankees have played 80 games. Teams like the Padres and the Dodgers that got started a week early in Seoul, South Korea, already past their midway point of this MLB season. Every team in Major League Baseball has played at least 76 games so far. 81 is that midway point of 162. So now we spin our discussion over to the National League. Donnie Wrightside here once again. A rare computer crisis for DRS, but he is back to break down the National League pennant odds. And DRS, the best team in baseball, that's your Philadelphia Phillies. The best record in all of the bigs, the second most wins in all of MLB at 51. Again, best win percentage, second most wins for Philadelphia, making a 51-26 record for the Phils after having a series victory this weekend. So, DRS, when you look at the Phillies, still trailing the Dodgers, plus 145 for LA, plus 270 for Philadelphia. To you, is that clear tier of two in the National League?
It does feel like it's a clear tier of two at this point. And also, I was trying to bring up a point before I got cut off by the computer out here, just zapped me, was the fact that we're taking a look at the Mariners at a plus 17 run differential, as opposed to other teams in first place, like the Guardians at a plus 104, the Yankees and the Orioles easily over 100. You look at the Philadelphia Phillies at a plus 114. The reason I bring that up is they're 51-26 on the season. Nobody's watching the Philadelphia Phillies game going like, man, I don't know how they're getting by. Like, the lineup's not that good. The pitching isn't that good. Yeah. They're dominant on a night-to-night basis, even though they're only 5-5 in their last 10 games. But when you're trying to line up and say, what's what in the National League? The Phillies, plus 114 differential. The Dodgers, plus 112. Even though the Phillies do have a better record at this time right now, there's no fluke between those two teams. So for me to try to say, like, well, who's going to enter into the equation and take them down? Now, granted, once we do get to the playoffs, we've seen it time and time again, Ben. The best team doesn't always win. And quite frankly, usually the best team doesn't ever win, it feels like, for the past couple years. But if I'm just being honest, the Dodgers are going to ramp up at the deadline. The Phillies will do the same. They're just the best teams combo for combo, pitching, bullpen, and lineup by far in the National League. And that's not really a slight to the Braves. They're just injured at this point. Otherwise, they would be up there. Yeah. But for me, the original point, Ben, Dodgers, Phillies, we'll see you in the playoffs, and it should be a dandy if they do meet up.
In the last few years, Donnie, and to start off this season, there has been that tier of two from the odds perspective in the National League, the Dodgers and the Braves. But unlike or the last two seasons, we did not see those two teams win a pennant. In fact, we didn't even see them play in the National League Championship Series. The Phillies have played in the NLCS each of the past two MLB campaigns. It has been weird at times throughout postseason baseball. And again, we stress that point as we look at the odds. The tier of two first in the National League was the Dodgers and the Braves. Now Atlanta has slipped a little bit because of the injuries to Ronald Acuna Jr., Spencer Strider, really, for the majority of this year, and some poor play. But a big weekend win for Atlanta on the road in the Bronx against the New York Yankees. You have a very large drop-off from the Braves to the Milwaukee Brewers. 12-1 price on the Brew Crew, but they've got a five-game lead in the National League Central. The Cardinals playing better baseball, two games above 500. The Brewers avoided a four-game sweep on the road in San Diego against the Padres, losing the first three games, but winning the finale yesterday. The Cards swept the Giants in that extended weekend series, the game on Thursday night at Rickwood Field, the last two Saturday and Sunday in St. Louis.
Yeah, and again, it's sort of that central bias that we have, because the big name markets on the East Coast and the West Coast usually dominate the standings, dominate the money, and dominate the lineups here. I do like what I see out of Milwaukee, but what are they going to do with the trade deadline? Are they going all in? Like, I'm asking, like, not the Cleveland Guardians to go all in, but make some adjustments here, or do they just rest on their laurels? But I do like the way that the St. Louis Cardinals have played as of late. That 1-9 is fun in that lineup if they can just get the pitching staff to go along with it. So that's what we're asking those questions. Like, okay, the Braves. Yes, we understand they can pitch, but is the lineup going to be good enough here to carry them through the summer? Because, you know, Ben, you can't win every game 2-1, 3-1. Eventually, that's going to catch up to you here. But the question for the Brewers is, I like this lineup hitting 1-9 much, much more than I've liked that lineup for the past couple years. So there is a little bit of intrigue to the Milwaukee Brewers. But again, it's the Dodgers. It's the Phillies. It's going to be an arms race in the NL. We'll see who gets some of those linchpins at the deadline to sort of propel those teams. I'm excited to watch it play. It's very top-heavy to me in the American League and the National League. But that doesn't mean we still can't have some fun here.
There are seven teams in the American League that are three games above 500 or better. Only four in the NL should make for a wild, wild card race. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A half hour of hoops live right here on this Monday on the early line on Sports Grid. I am Ben Stevens. Donnie Wrightside is here. The man in the middle is our coach, J.Y. James Young. The NBA season came to a close exactly 1 week ago. The Boston Celtics victorious in the NBA Finals. But we're not done talking hoops. This week, it's the 2024 NBA Draft. A two-night event now, both on Wednesday evening, that's round number one, and Thursday night, that's round number two. We'll talk NBA Draft discussions in just a moment, but the WNBA continues on in this historic start to a season. So, JY, as always, we appreciate you being here to begin this new week.
Thanks, guys, for having me on. It should be a fun half hour. Yep. We got a lot of hoops to discuss this morning.
Yes, we certainly do. And, JY, a rivalry renewed yesterday between Angel Reese, the Chicago Sky, and Caitlin Clark, the Indiana Fever. Two players that have started this rivalry dated back to their days in college basketball, now in the WNBA. They might deflect on what the rivalry is or the competition of which they play each other. It is more than just the individuals, that we know. But whenever these two teams link up in the W, it has been incredible. All three games this season between Indiana and Chicago decided by single digits. Two of the three by just a single point, including yesterday in Chi-Town. The Sky come all the way back from down by as many as 12 points in the fourth and final quarter to win 88-87. Indiana does cover as a 2.5-point road underdog. A total in the low 160s does go over. Angel Reese, sensational. Caitlin Clark, not half bad on the other side, but it's Chicago that ends up with a win. JY, what has your assessment been of Caitlin Clark and the Fever versus Angel Reese and the Sky in their young WNBA careers?
You know what, Ben? The best part about yesterday, there were no hip checks. There were no flagrant fouls. It was just basketball, and it was a joy to watch. And when you look at a team like Chicago, simply put, Angel Reese has been spectacular, going on a double-double streak that's been absolutely wild, going 25 and 16. I think the first to do it since, I want to say, maybe Asia Wilson with that kind of line. But to me, it was just as much the play of Cardozo. But the two of them got more rebounds than the entire Indiana Fever team. They combined for 26 rebounds. Now, here's what happened and what's special about this rivalry. They're elevating each other's game. When you look at, to me, Angel Reese, I talked about it as network, the fact that I thought she was hunting for fouls too much. She wasn't finishing strong, getting her hips to the baseline or drop step. She got to it. She got the ball higher up to the ear. And when you fouled her, she made her foul shots. But what a performance by a lot of people. Angel Reese, right? Just talked about Cardozo. Kennedy Carter was good, getting 23 points. On the other side, it was a good showing by Caitlin Clark, doing what she had to do. 17-13-6. Aaliyah Boston, I thought the game got away with Indiana because I thought they didn't go to her enough in the second half. They didn't go to her early. They went to her during the second quarter. They made their run a little bit third quarter, went away from her. Yes, she had some shots down the stretch, but Angel Reese, honestly, just took over the entire game.
If we take a look at these two ladies in the NBA as rookies, are we surprised here, Coach, that the learning curve that we thought we were going to see isn't really there? Because Clark has been putting up great numbers here over the past couple weeks, but also Angel Reese, as you pointed out, 25-16. I was talking to Ben earlier in the show, the physicality of, let's just say, college basketball and getting into the WNBA, it's not supposed to be an easy transition. How have these ladies handled this transition, look so good so early in their careers?
It's stunning. It really is, because if you look at Aaliyah Boston last year, she struggled. You look at the recent WNBA players, the number one picks, the Ionescus, the Stewies. They talk about the physicality of the league. These are grown women, and it's been really seamless, their transition. Both players, their usage rates are up, and they're doing things they did in college. Caitlin Clark as a do-everything kind of point guard, scoring guard, kind of picking her spots a little bit better now that other people are playing well. And Angel Reese just being an absolute freak on the boards. She's using her athleticism and her height. She does a good job of tipping the ball, kind of like a Dennis Rodman, a little bit, how she's able to secure rebounds and go get them. Rebound, what we call outside your area, which means if you just put your feet down, it's just not there. She goes and she gets rebounds. They've been fantastic, Donnie, and I've been thoroughly impressed to watch their games continue to take off in their rookie season.
25 points, 16 rebounds for Angel Reese. That's the first 25-point, 15-board game for a WNBA rookie. Jay, why you got it since Asia Wilson back during her first season in the W in 2018. 8 consecutive double-doubles for Reese. That's the most ever by a rookie in a row in WNBA history. Caitlin Clark, 17 points, 13 dimes, 6 boards. Her 7th game so far this season and in her WNBA career. And only 17 contests overall with 15-5-5. That's the most for a rookie in a single season since Candace Parker, who also had 7 for the entirety of the year back in 2008. Historic achievements for both Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, rising above even those sky-high expectations. Now we go elsewhere around the W. The team at the top of the table now, that's the New York Liberty, 15-3 after a 21-point road victory yesterday over the Dream in Atlanta. Sabrina Ionescu, who also set some rookie records, 26 points, 11 dimes yesterday to pace the Liberty. 15-3. New York has won 11 of their last 12, the best record in the WNBA. New York, the best record. Is the Liberty the best team?
Right now, you're going to say yes, but I got to see how Vegas continues to ascend as, you know, Chelsea Gray kind of gets going. But, Ben, here is the big thing, and we talked about rookies, right? Sabrina Ionescu may be on her best run as a pro. And it's been interesting, Ben, because she's done it with Courtney Vandersloot out of the lineup. Now, if you think about this, and if people want really history, before Caitlin Clark, there was Sabrina Ionescu in regards to a scoring guard who can get triple doubles, deep range, and she really has gone on an absolute heater. She's had 8 or more assists every game this month. Since June the 9th. She's playing extremely well, and the ability for her to score and dish with Stewie, with Jonquan Jones. Kind of remember, Ben, they're playing without Benajelani Hamilton, who's one of the best 3-and-D players in the league, and Courtney Finn, and they're playing really well. But right now, Ben, the best thing you can do with the Liberty, they could score like no one's business. If you see that team total at like under 90, I think it was like 88.5, 87.5, run to the window because this team can score.
Yesterday in the WNBA's best, the Sun, only 2 losses. They now have 3 losses because they lost to the Storm. And how about this, Coach? 72-61, only 61 points yesterday for the Sun. What happened there?
Well, simply put, when you look at the Sun, it's a couple things. Number one, their schedule, guys, was inflated. If you look at all the teams they played the majority of the decent teams at home, and the home loss they had was the Liberty, and the 2 toughest games they've gone on the road, they've gone on the road and lost. Seattle is a good team, and they're one of the better defensive teams in the WNBA. Simply put, Connecticut Sun do not shoot the ball well from 3. They don't have a 3-point shooter. DeWanna Bonner is a volume shooter. She can get hot. She can miss. Alyssa Thomas, not her game. Brianna Jones, inside. Harris, up and down. Carrington, more of a defensive player. So they don't have that scorer that could shoot it from 3. That's got to be addressed. That means DeWanna Bonner's got to shoot it better. Same thing with Harris because they have no one else who can do that on that roster.
The Sun, the 3rd best price to win a WNBA title. The Aces remain the favorites at plus 135 with the return of the point god in Las Vegas, Chelsea Gray. That number now feels justified. The New York Liberty, 2nd best price, but the W's best record at 15-3. From the stars right now in the WNBA, in the rookie class exceeding expectations, to the next batch of rookies in the NBA. The NBA draft is on Wednesday. We talk about it up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
There needs to be a little bit more excitement for the 2024 NBA draft and what we are seeing here to start this new week. So allow us to build that hype. That includes Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens, and JY is back for a second consecutive segment. Myself, JY, and old K-Dubs Kevin Walsh will be live on Wednesday evening starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for Sports Grid's coverage of the 2024 NBA Draft. A historic NBA draft, because for the first time ever in the association, it's a two-night event. Round number one on Wednesday, round number two on Thursday. And JY, as we get ready for Wednesday, one of the biggest developments in the last week, the change at number one between the two French players. Alex Sarr was the odds-on favorite for most of this draft cycle. Now it's his fellow countryman, Zachary Rizaschet, who is the hefty odds-on favorite at minus 240 to go first overall to the Atlanta Hawks, not far behind the guy you see on your screen, UConn's big man Donovan Clingan. JY, what have you made of all the drastic odds movement we have seen in the last week?
Well, you know, Ben, you and I were kind of on this weeks ago where I just thought it was a better fit for Rizaschet to go one, honestly, because of the fact that there was talk of Evan Sidery dropped a couple of weeks ago that Atlanta was looking to possibly trade DeAndre Hunter. It was just a natural spot to slide in Zachary Rizaschet. To me, the more surprising thing is the move of Donovan Clingan to the second odd, jumping Sarr. Simply put, Sarr won't work out for Atlanta. I don't know if this is he don't like the it's too hot down there. I don't know if he thinks, you know, hey, you know, last time Quinn Snyder had a big man from France named Rudy Gobert, it was go sit on the block and block shots, don't do anything else. I don't know if that's something to do with it, but it's obviously now moved the needle to the point where Atlanta's now holding the cards here because they have two different directions they can go. They can go with Rizaschet, which is what I think they will do, but if they want to try and move someone like a Clint Capella and slide Donovan Clingan into that five spot, they could do that as well. It's going to be intriguing, Ben, because if there's teams, maybe teams start come calling. Do you want to come get Alex Sarr at the number one pick? This is an Atlanta team that's a middling franchise that really is going to dictate where this draft goes in so many different directions, not just the fact of who they may select, but who they may trade before or on draft night.
We take a look at those two players that we seemingly were fighting for that top spot. It was Rizaschet and Sarr. What is the difference and why that substantial line movement in the favor for Rizaschet over the past couple weeks here?
Well, I think Rizaschet's got this talent that he has, the ability that we think he can shoot the ball. He's very long and defensive. I think he can get that's a wingspan nearly 7 feet. So here's a guy that his upside is really tremendous. Sarr's game is, you know, I guess I don't know if this is a willing endorsement. Low side, Nick Claxton, high side, Jaren Jackson Jr., meaning rim protector, shot blocker, lob threat. That is the Claxton. The Jaren Jackson part is his ability, Jaren Jackson, to stretch out and go through the three-point line. Sarr is not showing the ability to make those shots, but can it be developed? That becomes the key with Sarr. Is he more Claxton or is he more Triple J?
So, JY, as we look at the top 10 in the NBA draft, the Hawks draft first, the Wizards slated in with that number two pick, the Rockets at third overall. The Spurs will draft both fourth and eighth in the top 10, the Pistons at number five overall. We'll run through the entirety of the draft order, but I bring up the top 10 because the odds are now out on the FanDuel Sportsbook for who is the favorite to go in each of those 10 spots. We have three minus money favorites in those first three picks. Rizaschet at number one overall. Sarr, a hefty favorite at minus 550 at number two overall. Reed Sheppard out of Kentucky, the favorite to go third overall to the Houston Rockets. And then we get to plus money everywhere else in those opening 10 picks. JY, who are some names you are keying on for the rest of the top 10 and some teams to monitor come Wednesday evening?
Well, San Antonio right now at 4-8 becomes extremely intriguing, Ben, because of the fact that you look at, I think they can address their backcourt right away. I don't think, you know, Trey Jones is going to be the long-term solution. So I look at a guy like Castle at 6'6", his ability to defend. Could he be someone that could work his way and probably be there? He's the first one, Ben, that's a favorite at plus money that I would be looking at. I think Bozelis is very intriguing with his size, with his abilities. You know, he's favored at five. I think he's six. Kalingan, though, is the one that's going to kind of be really interesting, right? Because there is talks of he can go one. There's talks he can go three, which would be interesting because if he goes three to Houston, that means you're probably moving Sengun to the power forward unless you're moving Sengun. And if you're going big with Jabari Smith, Sengun, and Dominic Kalingan and try and play him big boy ball. But the guy that I am just I love during the college season, I love the game of Dalton Knecht. Dalton Knecht, his ability to shoot the ball is really important, Ben, in this modern-day NBA. But not only does he have deep range, his ability to pull up, his ability to play in the pick and roll, and this is a guy you could run off a ton of screens. I think he's extremely intriguing where his spot. And then two more names. I'm going to mess his name up. Tijon Salam. His guy's been flying up the boards, freakishly athletic, long, great defender. Where does he slide? I think he goes top 10. And then the tricky one is Topic. The point guard out of Spain is about 6'4", really great with the basketball, wizard, but it's got the ACL injury. Where does he slide? I still think he can find his way into the top 10.
Let me do what our producer should have done and say 1 minute here so we can look at the final big topic entering the 2024 NBA draft. Donnie gets that one right there, and it's Bronny James. We discussed last week with you, JY, the over-under draft prop has remained the same at 44.5. To be a first-round pick, it's a 5-1 number. The team favored to take Bronny James, the Lakers, even money, plus 100, that number growing shorter. So I'll ask it like this. Where does he go and when?
I think he goes late first round, early second round. Listen, Ben, I have him on 60th on my draft board, on my big board. But that's not where he's going to fall because someone's going to go get him. And I think he goes under 44.5. That would probably be one of my best bets of the night.
The Lakers?
Yeah, of course. They didn't trade back.
More around the NBA this offseason next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid, the NBA offseason in the summer months, almost as exciting as what we see throughout a regular season. And JY, we go to the rumor mill and we hit on a bunch of topics early on this Monday. A couple of coaching vacancies still out there around the NBA after the Lakers hired J.J. Redick just last week. So J.J. now in Los Angeles. He was rumored to be in the running for the other two openings that we see in Cleveland after the dismissal of J.B. Bickerstaff and, of course, the shocking news last week, the firing of Monty Williams by the Detroit Pistons. Who do you think takes those two openings as the head coaches of these two franchises?
Well, it's a lot easier to look at Cleveland because there's all this talk of Kenny Atkinson's being the guy. And I think Kenny Atkinson would be a fine choice for that team. I think a guy that's done a great job in developing young talent and would be interesting to see if he gets that job. I don't know what's taking him so long, but that's where I would go. If you look at a team like Detroit, you know, paying out $65 million, you're not going to be able to go and get yourself a big-name coach. You already tried that. So I think you may want to go with someone like Sweeney out of Dallas, Sean Sweeney as an assistant. Chris Quinn out of Miami is someone I would take a look at as well. There's been a lot of talk. People think that Johnny Bryant with the New York Knicks, because of his relationship with young players like Donovan Mitchell, and his development of Donovan Mitchell could be a key. So you're going to look at, I would say, more of an experienced guy, second time around guy like a Kenny Atkinson in Cleveland. Detroit, probably going to go with first time, maybe even Sam Cassell. That's another person that should be considered. But there's also rumors that Sam Cassell may be going to L.A. to go with LeBron, which means they're going to have to get LeBron. See, I already said LeBron's a coach. Going with J.J. Redick, I should say, not head coach LeBron James.
We're all so close to free agency here, which includes guys like Klay Thompson and Paul George. The interesting part was we were talking last week about Paul George. Just said some odd things across a podcast, basically saying, Coach, if I can paraphrase, I don't really know how much work I want to do, but I would like to play for a really good team, and I do want to handle some of the ball duties, but I don't want to have them all the time. Where does Paul George wind up here? Is it just back with the Clippers as he tries to get some steam around the league to try to force that contract into a max deal for the Clippers? Or is there a legitimate chance that he's on the move here?
I think he goes back to the Clippers. I think all of this is a smokescreen to say what he wants to try and go somewhere else. Does Philadelphia want him? There's rumored yes, then there's no. Now they're talking about New York. I woke up this morning, now they're saying it's Houston wants to get in the mix. All these teams want to get in the mix for Paul George. Number one, how's he going to get the most money, first off, number one? And number two, who wants to give a guy that really is not the most healthiest $50 million a year? Simply put, Steve Ballmer's going into that new arena. The best thing for them to do is run it all back. They got Ty Lue coming back. They got Kawhi. I think James Harden, you just bring everybody back. Hope that Van Gundy can help a little bit on the bench.
So, JY, I'll let DRS ask you about Klay Thompson, because new this morning, Donovan Mitchell from our guy Shams Charania at FanDuel TV, Cleveland is confident that they are in the final processes of re-signing Donovan Mitchell to retain him in the land and hire their new head coach. Regardless of who ends up with the head man job in Cleveland, do you think Donovan Mitchell will be a Cleveland Cavalier next season?
I think so, because if you think about it, the one team he always wanted to go to is New York. There's no need for Donovan Mitchell to be going to New York. Let him stay in Cleveland. Now it's about what you do if you get Kenny Atkinson, and what else you do, but in regard to the fact that you turn around, do you make a trade Darius Garland? And what do you do with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley? There needs to be changes made in Cleveland, but Donovan Mitchell, I think he stays.
And how about Klay Thompson there practicing, working out with the Team Bahamas here? Where does he find himself next year? And also, how much does he have left in his career and in the tank, I should say?
I don't know what he has left in the tank, but to me, it seems like he wants a clean break. Like he wants to go somewhere else where he knows he's going to start, where he's going to get the minutes, and then maybe he can regain his form. The question is, who's got the money? Do you look at a team like Orlando as a team that could use a guy that's a shooter, because they need to stretch the floor a little bit to play around guys like Bancaro and Wagner. So we'll see what happens. But I think clean break. I think this is the end of the Splash Brothers. I think Klay leaves.
What a new era it would be in Golden State for the Warriors, despite the production and, of course, last year not performing all that well, not getting into the playoffs in the play-in tournament. It would be a very new look for Golden State to not have both Steph and Klay alongside Draymond Green as well. JY, we appreciate the time. A fadeaway to the break. If I do not see you until Wednesday, again, Sports Grid's 2024 NBA Draft Special live at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I've been told by our producer, Joe Friso, that you'll be back, JY. Okay, enough of the jab steps. Hit the fadeaway. Hour number three on the other side of the break.